Hi, Chantal.
Hi.
Hi. Well, everything looks good, so if you're ready, we can get right down to it.
Okay, that's great. I'm ready.
Okay. let's start with your year of graduation, including if it was spring, fall, summer, and your major.
So I graduated in spring 2013, and my major was the professional music major, but I used that as a dual studies major so that I could do the music business and songwriting majors.
So officially you were pro music, but you're saying
Yes. You
took a lot of music business classes and a lot of songwriting classes.
Yep.
Perfect. Often dual majoring can add an extra semester, but you can pro music that and graduate in normal time.
This is true.
Yeah. Great. And what was your principal instrument?
My principal instrument was my voice.
Excellent.
And I learned to play some other instruments along the way, strictly for like production purposes.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, I bet, plus, of course, if you're songwriting, it can go a little better if you can noodle around on your own before you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
This is also true.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Well, we will get to your history later.
Okay.
For now, tell us about your current job. What do you do? Where do you do it?
So my most current role, because I actually left the agency that I was at, was at a digital media agency, well, full service media agency. So we do a lot of different kinds of advertising. But I was more centered in the digital space. So let's see, I was on a partnerships team. I was a buyer. So it was my role to basically craft and execute the client's objectives into like digital media campaigns.
So this was like an advertising agency, as in corporations would hire your agency to promote their
yes.
products.
So a few of our clients, let's see, Amazon is business that we just won recently. We actually also won the Lego business. So that's globally. So all of the initiative offices throughout the world will be working on some piece of Lego business. And let's see, they're working on some other accounts that I can't really mention right now, but I can talk about.
What was the company name, by the way?
Initiative is the agency, and Initiative is part of a larger like media and communications network called IPG. A lot of like media agencies are usually owned by larger parent companies that own many different kinds of agencies, including media agencies. So yeah, I worked at Initiative, one of the top four. And I say top four, meaning like one of the biggest four networks, media networks in the world. So
do you know about how many people worked at Initiative?
Yes. Initiative, our floor, we had about like 300 employees on the floor. And then there was always rotating people from other agencies that are IPG owned in the building.
Sure.
Who would rotate through our office space for different like war rooms and like new business, like projects, things like that. And then also like the main IPG like employees who like ran the office space. So.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. And you said you were mostly a media buyer.
Yes. So
first question before you go up, because I'd love description, but like out of these 300 people, about how many were media buyers like you?
In the digital channel or the digital buying role, I think there were probably about, I would say, like 25 buyers across the agency, and that's across all of the accounts that operate with Initiative right now. But there are other channels. We have television, we're full service. So we do like out of home and in office. That's a channel that's like mainly in like, you know, the healthcare endemic sort of vertical. because, you know, they promote and do advertising within doctor's offices. And there are other like channels as well. I mean, we had print buyers and a whole bunch of other different types. But as far as buying across channel, I think that the number would be like much more inflated. But as far as digital buyers go, I would say like 25 buyers across the agency.
Got it. But it's suffice to say a decent number of people.
Yes. Yeah. Digital operation is very, I mean, it's growing, which it should be. And I think in a really large traditional shop, like an initiative or like the other agencies within the IPG network, you know, that sector, that channel is like growing so much because of all the innovation that's happening in the field.
Sure.
That the team of TV buyers is huge because, you know, that's where a lot of traditional advertising dollars still go. But digital is growing and it's not going to stop growing. So, yeah.
Sure. Were you like on a team of buyers or were you hooked up?
I was on a team of three other buyers. Mm-hmm. One was the negotiator. And would sort of like begin these partnerships with some of the different like people that we would, you know, partner for, like vendors essentially, or publishers. So like Wall Street Journal and like, you know, Condé Nast and different vendors like
sure.
that. So yeah, it was a team of three of us. And then we had our director who was the director of our brand and as well as other brands within the account. There are, I think, a few associate directors, and then there was a director for, like, the entire, like, digital Merck account. So, like, all of the digital buying that was happening across Merck was, you know, so that was kind of the structure that I worked on. I should mention, I worked on a pharmaceutical account, so, like, there were different brands. So, like, I don't know if you've heard of, like, NuvaRing or... let's see, Belsomra, it's a sleeping drug.
Okay.
And like Keytruda is an immunotherapy cancer drug.
Okay.
It works with like your immune system to basically attack cancer cells. Mm-hmm. So we worked on the Keytruda account and there were people that worked on other accounts within the larger Merck account. So.
Got it. Yeah. So I like to love if you could go into a little more detail about like, what was it that you were, you know, actually doing as a digital account mm-hmm. buyer? Like, what's your day to day? Because
yeah, so digital buying or digital media buying is basically advertising throughout different networks, and targeting that advertising so that you can reach, you know, whoever your ideal buyer persona, whoever your ideal. Like within the pharma vertical, like whoever would be your ideal prescription, whoever would get a prescription from you. So that is something that follows a cycle throughout the year. So you start out by receiving the client objectives probably a few quarters before the end of the year. And that basically informs like all the strategy, all of the different buying strategies and partnership recommendations that are going to then be implemented into the new year. You go through a really like that time is very much like heavy with research and heavy with like, you know, historical data and like, you know, seeing the performance from these different vendors that want to be on the recommendation for the new year. And just really analyzing all of that and seeing, you know, who's going to be the best fit for this objective for the client. So there is, my day was filled with during that time. So that was like beginning of Q3. And when I say Q3, I mean like the third quarter of the year. So like mm-hmm. August, September, and October, I think, or did I just make that up? June or July? There it is. I'm so bad with months. It's like the last two quarters of the year actually merge into one big month. So around the beginning of that time is when we get all of these different strategies and things that our communications design team wants to implement based on the objectives that the client sets forth. And those objectives are also based off of like historical data, script lift, and script lift is like how much lift was there in the prescriptions that are being filled for the drug of Keytruda. And, you know, all of that informs those objectives. And our communications design team is our strategy team, essentially. Their job is to, like, craft these different strategies that are centered around different parts of the advertising funnel. The advertising funnel is basically the path that you want to lead whoever you're trying to reach along. And whatever that end goal, I mean, the end goal of that path can be a lot of different things. But ultimately, it's basically a journey that you take your ideal persona, your ideal buyer, or your ideal patient on. Mm-hmm. And the communications design team crafts those strategies. And now that the account has been with the agency for the time that it's been, like, I think there's been a lot of learnings over time about, the brand's positioning in the marketplace. And so they're starting to see, and also like points of innovation that they're starting to recognize, like, oh, these are different things that we need to try out. We need to start, you know, building upon the messaging that we're already doing because we see the success on brand X or brand Y and what have you. So they bring those strategies to us and, you know, we're strategizers in a way, but we strategize with our investments. So we say, okay, if we're trying to build awareness, we want to use this publisher or this endemic site, or, start native articles and campaigns that center around content and different things like that, that, you know, are being kind of, they're really large shifts in the larger digital like ecosystem. Like a lot of people are making that shift towards content and towards influencers and towards, you know, different touch points that we didn't have before because of the advent of innovation and the advent of, you know, our Instagram accounts and our, Snapchat accounts and that level of connectivity that has like innovated communication. So we then say, okay, we want to buy $2 million against this publisher for the year from, I don't even know, like August to, you know, and we also craft, like, when it comes to the partnerships that we're building, we also know when the messaging would fit the best throughout the year. So it's our job during that second half of the year, quarter three and quarter four, to kind of craft, like, when have we seen messaging pops throughout the year this year? And what kind of learnings can we take from that as far as the buying strategy that we're going to implement the next year? So then you go into sort of the end of quarter four. We've already made our recommendations to the client as far as those partners and publishers that we've deemed as strategic and that reflect the strategy that the communications design team has put together. And at this point, it's very much like coming up with the budget and seeing what we roll out to, but against what the client has slated for the new year, implementing those strategies. So using different platforms, campaign management platforms specifically, in the digital sphere. And there are other platforms for TV buying and for print buying and for other channel buying, by the way. But I'm very, very familiar with a lot of the platforms that you use in the digital space because, you know, all of our buys were within that channel. So implementing those and then, so I started sort of at the end of the year going into the new year as far as like laying out what my day to day looks like and what our like main projects would be because it is very much a cyclical buying structure. So a lot of those preparations that you make in the last 3 months of the year are then implemented when you start the year in January. So basically you use that time implementing those strategies on these buying platforms, like, you know, allocating how much money you're going to be spending with, you know, let's say a AOL or Oath or, you know, any of the other like large networks, media networks that are out there. And then when you implement, there is, I mean, because it's digital advertising, so these advertisements live online. You have to actually, you know, give those GIFs or those, you know, like physical advertisements, or like, I guess you could say online physical advertisements, those assets over to those publishers, because then they need to run those ads and run those campaigns with your messaging surrounding those campaigns and, you know, whatever editorial like they've slated and, you know, set forth for what our strategy is within our like upfront buy. And I'll get into what that means as well. But whatever that is, it's basically something that we need to then deliver to those publishers and vendors. So,
I was going to say, I'm just trying to get a beat of what it is your role entails. It sounds to me like you're sort of more of a data analyst. It's more of an analysis role than, let's say, a negotiator.
Well, actually, I still would say that I'm a negotiator and a buyer. Okay. And I would say that I'm more so that than a data analyst. I am a data analyst. Like, that's also not to say that. So let me explain what I mean by that.
Yeah, please.
I'm a data analyst because I have to research these strategic buys that we're going to be making for the new year. I have to analyze performance throughout the year. But I'm a negotiator because I go about the buys in a way that's strategic for the client, that's going to you know, accumulate as many savings as possible. So when we go to these partners and we go to these publishers, and so this is where the negotiating comes in, we're going to have rates for, you know, how many ads per, you know, click, for instance, that we're going to be kind of slating for a certain amount of time. And that rate is going to be something that should depreciate over time. So if we're working with a vendor and say our cost per click or our cost per impression is at, let's say, $16. I don't know what kind of buy I'm talking against as well. Like, this is purely hypothetical.
Sure.
And for the purposes to kind of explain where those negotiations come in, we know that we've been buying against this, you know, vendor or publisher for this rate for this year. And, you know, the new year comes along, or the new year is coming along rather, and we're nearing that time. We analyze and see that this vendor has been performing really well. We see that there has been a lot of, like, the rate has been really, really beneficial against our performance, like, goals, like our metrics, the things that our KPIs and the things that we want to shoot for. So, like, we want to shoot for, you know, a cost per unique visitor that's, like, extremely low. And, like, we see that this partner is, you know, performing at that very, very low rate. So that's someone that we want to include in the new year. But when we talk to that person, of course, we want to negotiate for a better deal than what we're getting before, because we want that added value. We also want those savings to go back to the client. And when I mean savings, I mean, if we can negotiate that rate of $16 to a rate of $15.25, we are saving 75 cents on that rate every cost per whatever unique visitor, and saving the client 75 cents. And, you know, these are budgets that are like in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So
sure,
when you
saving
think about
$10 or $20,000 is significant.
Exactly. So that's where the negotiating and the, you know, sort of like sales analyzing comes in. So you could say that I am a data analyst, of course, because of, you know, a lot of the performance analysis that happens throughout the year once we've locked in these vendors and locked in these dollars. But the negotiating part comes in when we're basically seeking those, I guess, like, dollars against our client and what we're already investing. So, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know where that left me off in the buying process, but I guess, like, you know, once you've sort of, you know, gone through that process of negotiating, like, you're basically able to basically traffic those digital assets. So when you go on NewYorkTimes.com and, you know, you're reading an article and an advertisement pops up after you've read, you know, 75% of it or whatever, and, you know, it's an advertisement that's for a brand that kind of aligns with what you were reading, and maybe your interest is piqued, and it's an, you know, a really rich sort of experience as far as, like, the advertisement that it is. You know, you respond to it, maybe you answer some of the questions that are in the advertisement, or maybe you click on it to find out more about the product that it's talking about. So it's our job to basically, you know, choose those vendors that enable those sort of advertisement experiences and user experiences within the, you know, environment that they have, you know, available. at their disposal. So like, for instance, an AOL is going to have like all of these different Yahoo websites and, you know, different editorial websites, like within their network of media. So they can really take our Keytruda ad and place it in a dynamic space that's going to, you know, really engage whoever's reading that article or on that, you know, online page. Or we'll take those dollars and put it into like a Health Grades who already has people like signed on as a community within that space. So they can take our messaging and put it there in like a very, very like within context, like environment. So we are the strategizers in that sense, and sort of the analyzers in that sense. And once we sort of lock that in, it's throughout the year, it's basically our job to, you know, monitor performance and make sure that vendors are performing well. So sure. That's sort of, I guess, my day to day, but more like a macro level.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple questions on that. One is, and approximate, of course, like how much total dollars of advertising did you as an individual oversee in a year?
In a year, I oversaw, I'm going to say approximately like $75 million in advertising.
Oh, that's a lot of money.
Like digital advertising dollars.
Yeah, Merck's.
Merck has been investing more and more into their digital advertising efforts. Also, I should also mention that some of our advertising dollars are merged with TV dollars. So we do like advertisement on Roku. We do advertisement on, you know, your Hulu and your other, I guess, full episode player and over the top players. So a lot of those dollars are video dollars. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
a lot of
sure.
those dollars are in specific indications within the brand. So the brand itself is called Keytruda, but Keytruda has been approved for a bunch of different types of cancers because it's immunotherapy. So immunotherapy works within a lot of different indications of cancer. So if you have a breast cancer indication or you're someone who's suffering from, you know, triple negative breast cancer, you're someone who would qualify for, you know, being even, I guess, considered for the drug Keytruda because we've recently gotten approved by the FDA for that. And so that indication, those advertising dollars might not be as much as per, like, you know, for instance, the melanoma cancer, which is a larger, there are a lot more people in the United States that have melanoma and skin cancer. So we, that's, our budgets are, they reflect sort of where our buyers and where our persona is at. And I say buyers, I really mean like patients, where those people are in the United States and how many are there. So yeah, I mean, I would say that the lung cancer drug has the majority of the dollars within the account. So that's where the majority of the dollars live. Gotcha. But yeah, it's a very large account and it's growing. And I say that because of all the other like indications that have been approved by the FDA. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely a growing space. So yeah.
All right, great. Hey, I love it if you could, it seems like things do change a bit over the course of the year, but you gave a great macro overview of your job.
Mm-hmm.
Could you sort of zoom in to like a micro level? Take us through your typical day. Oh, by the way, about how many hours a week did you work?
Approximately, I would say 45
okay.
Hours a week. Actually, like 45 hours a week is like, that's how much I like would expect to work in the week. I often would work more, depending on what part of the cycle, buying cycle that I was in. So like recently we were working until like these past couple of months, we were working until like 8 or 9 at night, a lot of nights, to get these huge media buys up and running and trafficked out to our ad operations team and, you know, all of our different analytics teams, things of the sort. So, you know, it's definitely a lot of work. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So back to it. Let's take us through your day. Like.
Yeah. Okay. So my day starts out because we get a lot of communication from different vendors, partners. So my day starts out with basically trying to clear my inbox. So I would arrive in and check up on any projects that are outstanding from the day before. So we have a lot of logs that we keep track of performance, or, you know, how much something is costing us, or different things of the sort. So, you know, checking in on emails, and as they relate to those projects, kind of like putting those larger emails aside to then craft my larger to-do list. But very much like inbox clearing and communication interfacing with different folks. And then after I get to a good amount of, you know, emails read, if not clearing the entire inbox itself, I would go into checking up on whatever that day was, like whatever those daily tasks would be. So I know, like in the beginning of the week on Mondays, we send out reports to all of our partners to basically tell them, this is how you were performing last week. This is how many users visited the site or visited your site or were interacting with our ad units on this particular day to this particular day. And, you know, this is how much you have projected to spend, or how much you've spent in a projected manner, because none of the spends were actually actualized, which means they weren't accounted for as far as the net. They were just basically like the gross spend. So sending those type of reports to our vendors. And then throughout the week, we had different things that we had to fulfill. So the second or third week of the month is when we're really putting together a flow chart with the communications design team to make sure that all of our spending is coming into budget with what they've allotted for each vendor. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that, you know, collaboration is happening on like the second or third week of the month. The end of the month is when we actualize. So when we account for, you know, how much performance actually happened and how much we're actually going to bill for, because we buy our media like before it actually, like, you know, happens, before it actually goes into market. So we could buy, you know, let's say $100,000 within a package, but we actually only deliver like $97,000. So we would have to adjust our billing to that, you know, $3,000 difference. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, if you can imagine, there are a bunch of different indications, a bunch of different vendors per indication within the larger brand Keytruda. So that was a lot of, you know, actualizing, billing back and forth with vendors to make sure that we align on like what we're charging. What we're paying out, rather. So that was sort of like what happened towards that point of the month. But going back to like that, you know, a day in the life, mm-hmm. After kind of putting aside like emails attached to larger projects and, you know, going through the inbox, one thing that we love to do was checking up on, you know, ads that are running to make sure that they're the ads that are supposed to be in market. Merck is a pharmaceutical client, and pharmaceutical clients have to be very wary and just eyes open about anything that could get them, you know, litigated, to be very frank. Sure. When drugs make certain claims or aren't approved by the FDA or are approved by the FDA but don't have enough studies to back up whatever like claims they are making, like they can get into hot water with people who, you know, are in the medical field, and they have to be very, very careful about the messaging that they put out. And it really, I mean, honestly, Merck is such a conservative client that most of the messaging that happens is in line, but they have restrictions on like the, even to the, like the type of ad that's running. Like if it's an out of date ad, it's not allowed to be in market anymore. So the ad could be saying, you know, things that are relevant to the drug, but if it's an ad that, you know, came out, you know, during a time where they were running specific campaigns and were in a new campaign, that could be considered like a deviation, which is basically when something happens within the digital sphere that is liable for action by whatever parties. And it's a really serious thing. Pharmaceutical clients are very, very, they have to be very conservative because of all of the eyes that are on their products, that are sure. on how they do business. So, you know, one of the things that we love getting into the habit of is checking what ads are in market. So we use our different platforms, the Google like advertising suite, which includes like DoubleClick Manager and like AdWords and, what's the other one? I'm going to forget the name, the other Google application. But anyways, so we use DoubleClick Manager mainly because that is the platform that our ad operations team uses to basically traffic our ads to our third-party traffickers. And our third-party traffickers are the people that basically wrap our ads in protective sort of trackers. So whenever you're on, you know, say you're reading an article on like Wall Street Journal online or mm-hmm. on your phone and you interact with an ad, depending on what brand or what product that ad is, it will be wrapped with some sort of tracker, and some sort of pixel to keep it in a brand safe environment. And brand safe could mean a lot of different things depending on who the brand is. But for a brand like Keytruda, we need to make sure that, you know, our ads aren't coming up alongside like, you know, propaganda, terrorist videos, pornography, you know, violence, just inappropriate like videos and content, things like that.
Sure.
So we make sure to send our advertisements not only through, you know, a tracker like a DoubleClick Manager to kind of track performance and, you know, how people are interacting with the ad, but we send it through to third-party verifying services. So like, you know, you have your Double Verify or your Integral Ad Science, Moat. There are other verification services that are out there. And what they do is they wrap your ad with a pixel, which basically restricts that ad from showing up, even being like an ad that's visible around content like that, which is pretty cool. But going back to DoubleClick Manager, we're able to pull reports from DoubleClick Manager, and we're also able to pull reports from Double Verify as well, to see basically, you know, making sure that the ads that are supposed to be in market are in market, and making sure that they're running against the correct publishers and vendors. And then also making sure that old ads that really absolutely need to be out of market are, you know, not running. If they are running, like it's a test pixel and, you know, it's a cached, you know, tag that's firing, you know, we just need to make sure that it's something that isn't in market. So they're, after dealing with emails, and then, you know, making sure that I have sort of my sights set on my larger projects of the day, mm-hmm. I just make sure that sort of that those little things that may, you know, those little QAs that you do for whatever projects that you have at hand, to make sure that you're not missing anything, that nothing falls through the cracks. And then after doing those, then I jump into those larger projects that, you know, either attach to emails or that are things that I know are relevant for the timing in the month. So, you know, if it was in the middle of the year and I know flowcharts are a thing, I'm making sure that I'm taking the actualized performance from the last month and calculating how much we saved a client. Mm-hmm. Based on like performance, and then taking that performance and informing, you know, other things within the flowchart process. And those are larger projects that I actually interact with like my larger team on as well. So I'll take care of like all of my emails and like projects that are attached to different correspondents. But then those larger projects are things that I collaborate with my team on as well. So yeah. And then like, I mean, there's a lot of hard work. So there's always going to be that flip side. A lot of my time, like, you know, towards the end of the day when I have like, you know, a lot of not free time, but just time to sort of like go back to those smaller ad hoc projects that I'm working on, I'll, you know, like touch base with some of my other friends who work on other accounts, like-minded individuals that are in the agency and that are really good friends of mine still, you know, after saying goodbye to Initiative, you know, spending time with other coworkers on my team, like in the beer garden. Like it's definitely, Merck is one of the accounts that are in Initiative, but we have other people that, you know, work on other accounts. at the agency, and everyone, we all work hard. So I think like having things like a beer garden and a gym in the office building is like, it just fosters culture, and it fosters, you know, just getting out of your shell once you've worked for like a long time throughout the day.
Sure.
So yeah.
Okay, great. So next question for you is, in order to qualify for these interviews, one of the criteria you had to meet was that you enjoyed what you do?
Yes.
So what is it about being an ad buyer, or at least maybe working in advertising, that you enjoy?
So I actually enjoy the strategic aspect part of it. I'm getting like, you know, I'm using a lot of redundant words, because it's so simple, and it's something that really made itself apparent to me, over the last like 6 or 7 months. And I didn't actually know that this was something that, was, you know, available, like a part of the larger marketing and communications landscape. Like, you know, I would read articles online and I would interact with applications like Instagram and, you know, the Wall Street Journal. I keep mentioning the Wall Street Journal, but, you know, other publications, and experiencing these ads and different like types of brand messaging for things that I actually really liked, things that really caught my eye and really intrigued me, and didn't know that this was because there is a digital buyer and a strategist out there that's crafting this experience specifically for me based on, you know, what my activity has been, my behavior has been as online Chantal Sterling. So I now discovering, first of all, that, you know, digital buying is what has, you know, basically informed all of those online experiences before. And seeing that it is very much a point of communication, I learned quickly that I really enjoy doing this. I love partnering with different vendors and publishers and learning about the really, really interesting and very cool things that technology is allowing for different brands to do now, and how brands are taking advantage of that. Like, for instance, learning about like one of the publishers that we work with, they're an online community, and they're like an endemic online community, and they work mainly within the health sector to, you know, give their community members a real inside look on different topics in the health world and how to be healthy and how to, you know, deal with things that happen, you know, as a result of, you know, disease and other things. It's like a really interesting space. And one of their capabilities is augmented reality. So like they basically have these like resources in the, within their different health communities. So they'll have like a breast cancer health community. And like within that community as a resource, like as a member, you can, you know, go into their breast cancer, like augmented reality platform, and actually see like how the cancer affects your body, and, you know, play around with different widgets and like cool, like, you know, like different levers on their actual like platform, and see how different, you know, drugs and different immunotherapy drugs like help you, you know, get better essentially. And I thought that was amazing because they're leveraging technology and they're leveraging augmented reality to like, you know, create this amazing brand experience, like, or potential brand experience, for these different like brands that are out there that are actually, you know, doing well for their patients. Now, as far as like pharma in general, that's a vertical that I didn't enjoy. I very much, you know, found that, a lot of the marketing that we're doing is very much traditional, cyclical, messaging. And I was seeking a lot more touch on like whatever account that I was going to be working on. I also feel like coming from a background that was so entertainment and music heavy, and just creative like heavy, I knew that I wanted to be like behind a brand that I could actually get behind.
Sure.
So I am currently in the market, looking to like find opportunities within like the digital space still, because I'm really passionate about that type of brand messaging, like utilizing these different cool technological innovations and like using them to your brand's identity and to your brand's success. So I really, that type of stuff really like excites me and like, you know, makes me really, you know, excited for like what I can do as a communicator, because that's what I see myself first and foremost as. But as far as the pharmaceutical vertical, I recognize that that's something that, you know, is not for me. And I think I'm going to like continue.
You're a little more like innovative and cutting edge and take risks a little more.
Definitely. And I think that if you are someone who wants to learn, though, if you want to learn about sort of like being able to manage really, really large expectations within a space that isn't, you know, that is very structured. So there aren't going to be any really new things that are going to, well, let me not, I don't want to say new things that are going to throw things off balance, because things are always getting thrown off balance within the digital space. But as much as you can, so far as like the brand itself goes, like, and the things that you can do for that brand, if you want to learn those fundamentals, I would definitely, you know, I wouldn't, you know, it's not a bad account to start on. Obviously, if you start on another account or another type of vertical like sports or entertainment or something like that, or even health, but, you know, not pharmaceutical health, I think that you could learn a lot. But I definitely think that if you find yourself, you know, with an opportunity within the pharma space, but in that channel of like digital buying, there's a lot to be learned and there's a lot of skills to be like built upon. So I definitely learned a lot. I definitely, you know, wouldn't be at the space where I'm at now, knowing that digital is somewhere where I want to stay, without having, you know, experienced the things that I experienced on that account. I really learned a lot, and I learned a lot of like personal efficiencies that I think are going to inform like my next step. So yeah, but I mean, I'm very passionate about the digital space. I'm passionate about, you know, all things like communications. So yeah, I don't see myself leaving this field for a little while.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, hey, let's take it back now to 2013.
Yeah.
So I mean, guessing you weren't thinking digital market advertising space.
Yeah, right.
So, I like this kind of as, you know, Berkeley's finishing up, but we could go back further if need be. But sort of put us in your headspace at that time, as well as what you were doing, and then we'll take it one step at a time from there to where you are now.
Okay. So when I graduated, I didn't know what it was that I wanted to do, because I was writing a lot with, well, at that point, I was actually working a lot more. I was working at a Starbucks and I was working at another restaurant, Sweetgreen. I was like forgetting the name.
Oh, yeah.
But I was doing that because I knew that I needed to save up money, because even though I didn't know what it was I was going to do, I knew that I wanted to be in New York. Like I just knew that I needed to be in this city. I love it so much. And you know, I knew that I was, I knew that I was going to learn, a lot. And I think that's why I loved it. I loved like,
can I ask where you're from initially?
So I was born in Jamaica, Queens, New York. So I was born in New York, but I was raised in Philadelphia.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, I went to school there and then ended up at Berkeley.
Cool.
But knew that, you know, New York was going to be the spot for me. I know a lot of my peers were, it was, you know, very much this game of like, is it New York? Is it LA? Because, you know, it's Berkeley. Or is it Nashville? Because it's Berkeley. So a lot of people were sort of figuring those things out. But I knew from an early time that it was going to be New York. And I honestly, like, for a long time, couldn't even really say why. But towards the end of my time at Berkeley, I knew that it was because of the like growth that I was going to have to sort of like go through, because I think being at Berkeley, like I learned so much, specifically from the people that I was surrounded by, but very much from the craft that we were all like enacting on. I think that I wanted to learn, because I learned so much from the craft of music and performance, and entertainment business. And also, like, you know, knowing that you know, that is a certain type of education in and of itself. But I was, you know, very much, I don't know, within a bubble. Like I was very secure. Things were super stable. I knew that I needed to like grow within like a place like New York where there's so much creativity. There's so much energy, like creative energy. But there's also, there's this like know-how and sort of like this independent like energy that also lives in the city that I very much like, you know, I knew that I needed to make myself better as a musician, but also as an entrepreneur and a business person. Sure. So I decided, okay, this is going to be, this is what it's going to be. And, you know, what I need to do is kind of prepare for that. Okay, so,
great. So you graduated and you moved to New York?
I graduated. I moved to New York that September. So I graduated in May. I spent the summer working, moved to New York in September.
More was the still, restaurant work.
Yeah, more of Starbucks, mainly because I, first of all, had sort of a track towards like becoming a supervisor there. So at the time, I was like, okay, I really want to do this. I really want to, you know, go through the different trainings and see how it is to sort of be responsible for running a piece of business of my own. Mm-hmm. And decided that it wasn't for me. A few things happened and I felt like I needed to grow more in a more professional environment. And so decided, you know, okay, we're going to take steps to move to something that isn't within the food sector.
Gotcha.
So left Starbucks and decided that I wanted to look for a media job. So then I, you know, kind of hit the ground running. I was looking all over the place.
And when you say really media, are you saying definitely music or like music or something else?
I was saying like it didn't even need to be music, but I knew that I needed to be, you know, reliant on my skills of communication because, you know, being at Berklee, like being a performer was amazing, but I was doing so many other things as well. I was like in plays and doing a lot of like poetry and writing, and so I was like, I just need to be able to express myself.
Okay, that's cool.
And communicate. And so I was like, I was looking for music roles within like labels and different publishing companies in the city. And I was also looking at roles in the fashion industry. Just anything that was like with a creative touch. But I would be very much reliant on my skills of communication and like being able to sort of like work hard towards whatever strategic goals were set forth for me.
Sure.
That's kind of what I wanted. So I was like looking for like anything that was like within the media field. So like entertainment, music, like television, fashion. I mentioned that. And then a whole bunch of other different things. And I found an internship actually, with a fashion PR agency.
Could I ask, it's an unpaid internship or?
It was an unpaid internship and I knew that I needed to find a job as well. So I did also find, a role at a little boutique, a French clothing boutique in the Upper West Side.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, well, I'll be working, you know, I'll be like, you know, able to pay my bills.
Uh-huh.
But then, sort of growing as a communicator and as someone within this public relations field. And I did, I learned so much. I, you know, built a network of different people, and really kind of surprised myself with the things that I was doing. You know, going to fashion shows, walking in fashion shows, like all of these really amazing things, interacting with like celebrities. And it was a lot of fun, but uh-huh. I knew that I needed to like keep learning. So I did a stint at a, e-commerce agency, and I got that job from one of the girls that I knew at the French boutique. And so we both actually ended up working at this e-commerce agency for like almost a year, and you know, things sort of got,
what were you doing mm-hmm. there?
When I was there, I was basically the customer service representative for Salvatore Ferragamo, or like the culture ambassador for them. So I was answering questions from all over like the United States and like some of the different country or Canada, and then like some other inquiring like places. I'm not even really sure of like where else But I know it was, like, the U.S., Canada, and, like, somewhere else. But basically, I was, like, the customer service, like, support specialist, and, like, a growth almost specialist, like, you could call it, because it was my job to, like, clientele, to get people to, you know about different products and different things that Salvatore was, like, working on and releasing and things of the sort. So that's basically what I was doing there. And then I was working with, like, the Ferragamo team at Fifth Avenue on, like, just any and all things having to do with the CRM database, which is where we, like, logged a lot of these, like, clients and their calls and their purchases.
Customer resource management, right? CRM.
Yeah. So did a lot of that almost for a year. Mm-hmm. And then went so over to, like
2014 at this point, or 2015?
Yeah. We're at 2014, almost 2015 at this point.
Okay.
And then at that point, I was like, I really need a lot more on the ground training, like in the space and not like at an outsourced location, because the e-commerce agency was like basically their like call center, if you will. Like, we weren't on the ground with the team. We weren't, like, you know, like, getting our hands dirty with the strategy, none of that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I need to grow a lot more. I looked for different roles, like, at, this was very random, but I really only very much did these roles because of the growth that I was going to get as far as the work that I was doing. So I was an executive assistant at, like, three different hedge fund / investment firms. Very random. But...
How did you get those jobs? Just apply online? So,
I went through, like, staffing agencies.
Sure.
And they had a need for that role. So decided that was, like, you know, something that made sense. I mean, it paid very well. And it was freelance. So it was very much, like, wasn't very... it just wasn't so structured that I couldn't build my own schedule. Like, I could take days off when I needed to, things like that. I was really trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. So I needed that flexibility. So did that for about a year as well, until I got into, like, knowing, like, okay, I really need to be in a media space. I've learned enough about, you know, like, all the different sectors that I've been in so far, fashion, finance, like, music, entertainment. Like, I know that I really want to be in the communication space, like, the larger communication space. So I went into a job at Macy's on their marketing team. So back to sort of, like, retail, fashion and retail, but very much, like, on their marketing team, like, responsible for, like, advertisements that lived on their website. And trafficking those. So you could call my role sort of like an ad operations role there, but it wasn't really ad operations because I was basically creating the jobs that then they would take and then traffic themselves. Mm-hmm. But then executing those jobs based on the strategy that the marketing team was coming to our planning team for. And then spent some time there. It was a contract role, like all these roles. After the e-commerce agency, everything else was like a contract role up until I got to my role at Initiative. But anyway, so left Macy's.com because I got an opportunity at this other digital media agency called Huge in Brooklyn. And that's really what opened up a lot of my, like, more recent training as a media professional. Mm-hmm. That's where I learned a lot more about, like, social media strategy and just online strategy in general. A lot of the things that Huge does, like, no matter the department that you're in, like, is very innovative. And so, you know, we had, like, robots walking around the office and, like, you know, like, I don't know, different, like, startup groups and meetups. And it was a really, really, like, progressive space. So, and it was in Brooklyn. So I wasn't traveling too far to go to work. So to be in that type of a space was really inspiring for me. I knew I needed to continue being in media, specifically a digital media space. And that was a contract role as well, but the opportunity presented itself at Initiative. And I knew, like, this is just, you know, the next step in this journey of mine, like, in communications. So I took the opportunity Initiative. I was freelancing at first. For the first, like, I would say, like, 6 months. And then I converted to full-time and spent a year on the Keytruda account. So that was, that's basically a really, really quick.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. How did you get the job at Initiative?
I got the job at Initiative through the same staffing agency that placed me at Huge.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
These staffing agencies would place you places. And as you say, at some point, Initiative made you full-time.
They did. They did. I converted back in April 2017.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you said, this is good, but you want, as we already discussed, maybe a little field that's a little bit more hip and on the edge.
Well, I hip is, I guess, a word. I'm looking for more touch on the brand that I work on and a brand that I can get behind. So gotcha. I've been talking, I don't want to say too much, but, you know, just talking to different people in different, like, technological spaces, information technology spaces, as well as, like, your... like publishers, like some different publishers. So we'll see what the next step is. I'm very excited for what's to come, just based on, you know, different conversations that have been happening. And I know that I'll probably end up in a vertical that I know is, you know, much more aligned. Definitely, probably not music, even though ideally I would love to work in a music digital space, because that would be really exciting, like a Tidal or a Spotify would be really fun. But I also am very, very excited about some of the different, verticals that I think I'm going to be looking into and talking about further. So, yeah.
Gotcha. All right. That's great. And here you are.
And here I am. Yes. Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
All right. We're not done yet.
Okay. Okay.
But we'll move on to, let's say, the third and final part of the interview, which is, my next question for you, and let me preface it by saying there's no right or wrong answer, is what, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
Right now my current relationship with music is digging for as much cool, amazing, musically informed, like, pop, Afrobeat, and like reggae and dancehall music, so that I can build my my discography, so that I can DJ really amazing parties in Brooklyn and in New York. Music is a huge part of my life still.
I'm sorry. Do you currently DJ?
So I've DJed a few different functions. I have not. I would never invite anyone yet to these functions, because I'm really growing and I'm learning. I'm making mistakes still. So, like, I'm not, but I would like to continue DJing, and I've gotten in touch with a few different people, in the DJing scene in Brooklyn and in New York, and have actually met recently. I just met somebody who is a DJ instructor. So I'm very excited about that, but we'll see. But yeah, I still write like almost every day. Like, well, now it hasn't not been as consistent. Let me just be honest, but I have been writing a lot, as far as like overall, like the last couple of months I've needed to, because of the transition, like knowing that I wanted to go from pharmaceutical, like elsewhere, was a huge decision, because I learned a lot from the account that I was working on. And it was going to be a huge, it was just going to be a big change. So I was writing a lot, to like therapy, like some of the things that I wasn't able to really go to a therapist about. So I still do that. Sometimes when I get little ideas, here and there, I'll like record them on my phone. It's like one of my favorite things to do when I'm like in a space, like, and I sort of need that outwardly expression, and yeah, just like discovering new music has really been a joy of mine, because I love music so much. It's not so much a part of my day-to-day like now, so like relegating it to finding music that, you know, inspires me, makes me super happy, and like informs what I hope to do musically, like as a DJ, is definitely, yeah, that's enough for me as of right now.
Very cool. All right. So my next question for you is, sort of thinking about your current career in that, you know, brand advertising space. And now looking back to your education at Berkeley, Compared to, if you'd gone to college somewhere else, is there anything you feel your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing these days?
I would say, that there is a, there are a lot of things that I didn't know coming into Berkeley, so there was a learning curve, and one of the things that I think Berkeley taught me was jumping over the learning curve, recognizing, okay, what don't I know? What tools do I need to accomplish whatever the task is at hand? What do I need to learn in order to gain those tools? Thinking in steps, which is something that may sound very, conceptual. That was a major lesson, because a lot of the topics covered in ear training, you have to understand fundamentals before you can solfege a line of music. Even that thought process has informed things that I do to this day, understanding fundamentals, and asking those necessary questions to then, execute some sort of brand or budget allocation, or, decide whether or not a partner needs to get cut because they're not performing well. That is the type of thinking, the critical thinking that mm-hmm. has informed a lot of the things that I do today. I would say that as far as the actual skills, I'm not, well, I guess I am doing some contract negotiation because our insertion orders are contracts, and so we have to negotiate the terms that go into those. So I guess some of that, because I took a few contract negotiation classes through the music business side
sure.
of my studies. And so some of that definitely has impacted how I work, understanding the importance of the terms of and conditions within a contract, and handling my work when it comes to contracts, in a different way than I handle other things, mm-hmm. With more even more scrutiny and attention to detail, and just fulfilling what are the basics, is something that I learned way back at Berkeley. And then I don't know, I would definitely say that, not being intimidated by the learning curve, understanding that the learning curve, no matter what the project is at hand, just involves understanding fundamentals or, having the background.
Confidence that you could figure stuff out, you're saying.
Yes. And the independent thinking, thinking about things like, what can I do? What is the most that I can do to kind of move forward, and recognizing what things that you need someone else's input, someone else's collaboration to do, in order to complete the task at hand. So that, I guess, is the other thing, is the collaborating end of it. Mm-hmm. Getting me early on needing to collaborate with different people and working together. And also learning about, different people.
Sure. No, great answer. So let's turn the question around now, because mm-hmm. Berkeley gives that one degree, a bachelor's in music, and you went there knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything where, when you look back at Berkeley, you say, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was there, and they mm-hmm. could have taught it to me and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete?
Yeah, I would say a comprehensive liberal arts program, already established, would have been, and that established and well integrated in the the music side of the curriculum.
Because Berkeley mm-hmm. does have a liberal arts department.
Mm-hmm.
So
when I was going to Berkeley, I would say that the liberal arts department was established, but was not well integrated or well oiled. There were a lot of conversion moments of just sort of confusion. And when I say conversion moments of confusion, I mean how am I able to convert what I'm learning here into what my education overall is about? And I don't think that there was enough of that connectivity. I also think that the liberal arts department could have been much more robust. like the liberal arts department as it was when I was there. Like, for instance, like being in the music business major, I mean, I definitely learned a lot, but I think the music business major needed a lot more how should I say this? Like variety. There are so many different sectors in the music business. I mean, I mentioned Tidal and Spotify earlier. Those are players in like the digital space within music. And that the fact that none of that was even explored within the environment of a class where you're like learning how this innovation is changing the industry and how you can take that innovation and, you know, I don't even know, either work within that field and learn the things that are relevant within that field, like maybe even have people from the Spotify's or the Tidal's coming in and talking to the people that work at Berklee and that study at Berklee and teaching them about this, you know, new space. I thought that connectivity was not there too, like, so that variety rather in the music business major. And I think that
sure. And you were starting to say something about liberal arts and the king.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think you said it. The liberal arts department just needed to be much more robust, much more in tune with what's going on in our country in general. Like, you know, I think that the touch points with the outside industry and the liberal arts department did not come together as seamlessly as they could have. Gotcha. Given the resources, given the aim of the department, what the aim in my opinion should be. Gotcha. So that, but I mean, and that is all saying that while recognizing that I did have very educational experiences there, and if it weren't for those experiences, like, I would not, you know, be the thinker that I am today. Sure. But I do recognize that that department really needed a lot of help, especially when I was there. And I think still to this day, I think Berklee could use, because I haven't heard word of this yet, you know, that connectivity with the industry right now, like having reps from Spotify, reps from Pandora coming in and collaborating with the people that are at Berklee, like the musicians or the music business, the, you know, kids in that, you know, major, to talk about where our industry could go and, you know, collaborate and innovate with like these fresh thinkers that are, you know, wanting to use their brains in that way. So yeah, I think that, you know, that is something that any institution can benefit from, is, you know, trying to remain relevant and not in a way that is tied to dollars, but in a way that's tied to innovation, because I think that innovation opens up a lot of growth. Gotcha. So, yeah.
No, great answer. So, but next question for you is that, you know, it's like you moved to New York. Once you were in New York, you figured you wanted to work in this, you know, advertising / public relations, you know, media space pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And then that led, you know, on a slightly, maybe slightly windy, but pretty solid yes. path to where you are now.
Yeah.
And the idea is like, okay, there are, I'm sure you're aware, other Berklee grads who haven't yet found that path. And there's people in their last year at Berklee staring out into the big scary world going like, you know, oh my God, what's going to happen after I graduate?
Mm-hmm.
So for either or both of those groups, do you have any advice?
And just to be clear, you're saying like the first group would be the person who hasn't found that path after.
Right. Maybe like they're a year or two out of Berklee.
Okay.
Maybe they've been doing a little music and, you know, working at Starbucks, but that doesn't feel like the music thing's going anywhere. They're like, well, what, you know. Yeah. I need a plan B, or maybe there's someone where, yeah, they're just kind of feeling stuck, or, you know, like they haven't found that great career path yet.
I would say to both parties, actually, like, it's not really much different for either group.
Yeah.
I would say learning and education, as well as learning discipline, is going to be what sort of brings you, and whatever that, so when I say learning discipline, I really mean, like, if that means, you know, like, music aside, like, reading an article every day, or, like, interacting with someone within your network every week, like, whatever that that goal, like, is for you, and however recurrent it needs to be, set that and get used to fulfilling that goal. So learning discipline, and then just learning in general, like, not ever being, like, never think that just because something isn't within your vertical, when I say vertical, I mean, like, music, if something is not music related, that it's not something that, you know, you wouldn't do yourself a favor learning about, because that could be something that opens itself to, you know, an industry that you didn't even really know existed, that music still is a huge part of, which is literally exactly the experience that I had. Like, I was open to learning and found this industry of digital media and digital media buying, and just, like, digital advertising in general. And, like, after being in this space for so long, like, now I know that I could easily make a pivot back to music if I so choose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and that's for me, that's, like, a really exciting thing to think about, because I am someone who loves innovation. I love innovating myself. I love, like, reinventing the things that I have, like, sort of built on. But, you know, it's really hard to do that if you don't make it consistent to put in that work or acknowledge those deadlines or whatever that discipline is. So, you know, and it is, I mean, I would say also to, like, the third thing, I guess, outside of learning to set goals and getting used to accomplishing big and small goals, literally it doesn't matter, just get used to accomplishing them. And then also, like, learning in general, like, not being closed off to learning, is also understanding that Rome wasn't built in a day. And I don't even care how cliche that sounds. Like, Beyonce wasn't built in a day. Rome wasn't built in a day. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of work. And I say Beyonce because we all, as musicians, look at people who can be, like, multifaceted, who can be entrepreneurs, who can be innovators, who can change industries, who can inspire, you know what I mean? We all see those artists, and the people that stand out the most are the people that can communicate. And there's TED Talks about this. Apple does this. The brands and the people that stick out to you the most are the people that are able to tell you why they're doing what they're doing in the most succinct way that is most relevant to you, backed up by data, you know, like, backed up by the actual, like, you know, resources and assets that prove whatever it is, like, whoever they are. You know, so it's like, when you think about all of that, it goes really down to being able to accomplish things, being used to accomplishing things, creating that environment where that consistency is something that you're already used to. And if you're learning, you're going to be always learning about things that either you don't know or things that you might have known a little bit about but need to know more about. And the combination of those two things are unstoppable. But also knowing that because, you know, you have these two things that you're working towards, it's going to take time, and hard work is something that you have to absorb as far as, you know, the readiness to enact on it. So, you know, not beating yourself up, like, it's not done in, you know, a year even. I know, like, I left Berkeley thinking that I would be where I'm at now within a year, and it took me, I think, 4 years to get to where I'm at now, which isn't even sort of, you know, what I see for myself in the future. But I know it's going to happen because I have that combined two-pronged approach.
Sure.
So, yeah.
All right, great. Great answer. And to focus in a little bit more, I'm going to have you, I try to decide whether to put you in under marketing or under, like, media purchasing or something.
But you could put me on, well, you could definitely put me under marketing and advertising. Okay. Yep. You could put me within digital media advertising, or digital media buying. Mm-hmm. I was a partnerships associate. That was my official, like, title. So, like, you could, you know, also put me within, like, a brand partnerships or partnerships category as well. But overall, I'm a digital media professional, so like whatever that means to the organization of the site.
Sure. Great. My point is that
yes.
if you've looked at the otherberkeley.com website,
yes.
it's got well over 100 interviews.
Yes.
Well, a little over 100.
I'm like looking,
you're looking
at it now.
Yeah, you're going to be somewhere like number 109 plus or minus one.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
point is, no one's going to listen to over 100 interviews.
Exactly.
The people
they're going to seek out what they need. Yeah.
Right. So the people listening to this conversation are the ones who find you in that category.
Mm.
And they're like, hey, what's this about? Hey, this sounds kind of interesting. So for someone, let's say, who's specifically interested in working in that the digital media marketing space, do you have any specific advice for them?
Okay, specific advice for someone working in the digital media marketing
space?
Someone
hoping to work in the digital media.
Yes, yes. So first off, like, learn as much as possible. Definitely try as best as possible to be positioned on an account that you would like to work for. That's like kind of superseding my first bit of advice, but I say what I said first, because if you don't have the luxury to have so much choice on the account that you're going to be working on, which is a lot of the time, like if you're just new to this field, sometimes you are going to be placed on an account that maybe you didn't have so much choice in. I would still say learn as much as possible. Learn how that brand plays in the digital space. Learn how the competitors play in the space. Learn about the types of chat, like the digital like screens that they're using, and learn why. And always like network with your larger team. Network with the strategy team. Network with the client team. Whatever team is interacting with the client directly, network with them and learn what they do, so that you can understand the piece of business on a larger scale than just what you do. So that would be my main advice. Like, learn as much as possible, no matter what. But if you can have some sort of say in whatever account you're going to be working on, so that you can, you know, have it align with what you're interested in, try to do that, so that that learning process is even more, you know what I mean? You're even more excited and eager and dedicated to the amount of learning that you're going to do. Because no matter what account you learn on, or no matter what account you start on, like if it's a large account, you're going to do a lot of learning and a lot of work. So you might as well make it be an account that you are passionate about, like a Nike or a General Electric, or you know what I mean, like something that you know you're interested in, because all that learning is going to really follow suit. If you don't have that choice, though, still learn as much as possible, because that type of learning and that type of experience is it's marketable and it's very valuable. Like spending even a year on an account, and learning as much as possible is very valuable in the eyes of recruiters. Like once you come out of it knowing, oh, I'm not really, this is not something that's for me here, or it is, you know?
Yeah. No, great answer. All right. I only have one last question for you, Chantal.
Okay.
Which is, you have the mic and you're being recorded. So is there anything we missed? Anything else you'd like to say?
Let's see. Anything? This is not even really anything. You know, I think that there are, I'll just say it, whatever.
Please.
I think that, you know, once people leave school, a lot of people, like, I put a lot of emphasis, rather, on the conversation of New York, LA, New York, LA earlier. But I just want to say, like, if moving back home is something that you need to do, do it. Because student loans and bills, like New York rent, is like, for all intents and purposes, like a hurdle that really, I mean, I don't even think people who are really well off in the city like feel like they fully, you know, understand what this city is doing to us.
Right.
And I guess indicates how much of a real New Yorker I am. Like, I, like, New York is really, I'm shook by what the city has been doing to the people of this city as far as rent and as far as the MTA. So just you know, if you need to move home or, you know, make decisions that are financially smart for you, do it. I say that 100%. The opportunities will always be there. The learning opportunities will always be there, but the opportunity to get yourself together so that you can learn properly will not be there. So do it. Like, live with your mom, live with your family member, you know, save your money. Even if you're living on your own, if you can take the cheaper apartment, if you can make whatever, you know, whatever decisions that are going to be better for your pockets in the long run, do it. Because yeah, that's like being in the city for as long as I have, which isn't that long, but it's long enough to know, like, you don't want to be in, you know, such a bustling city and not be bustling yourself.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's just, yeah. Don't be ashamed. Like, don't be ashamed about anything. Yeah.
Yeah. No, very good. Great to attend on. Well, hey, Shatai, I really enjoyed this conversation. So glad we could make the time.
All right. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it, too. This was fun.
All right. Great. Well, best of luck to you. And have a great
New Year. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. You too. Happy New Year.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.